Welcome. My name is Andre Pimenta. I'm one of the directors at Edison Wealth Management, and I'm pleased to be the host of this, the first audio version of Edison's market and strategy updates. For some time, we have been meaning to record some of the written analysis we send out to our clients. We intend these recordings to be on point, relevant, and concise in the usual style of the content our clients regularly receive from Edison. We thought that with so much to talk about right now, this would be an opportune moment to record this, the first installment of what is to be a series of updates and insights from the world of wealth management. It has been a particularly eventful year so far, with a lot going on in the markets and plenty of bad news, so I've asked Chris and James from the investment team at Edison to give us a rundown of what's been happening recently and how we are positioning our portfolios for the coming months and years ahead.
Hi, Andre.
And for those of you who do not know the team at Edison, James heads up our investment management service and Chris heads up investment research. Chris is at the forefront of our research, which underpins our investment decisions and is well placed to see through the headlines to what is really happening in the markets. And James can translate how that research feeds through into day-to-day investment decisions we make. So, Chris, if I can start with you, could you help make sense, broadly speaking, of what's been happening in financial markets?
Yes, well, Andrew, I think you got it right. The word eventful is certainly apt. The first half of 2022 has been an unusual and a difficult period for markets. We've seen almost every type of asset class around the globe decline so far this year. I say it's been unusual because normally, in simple terms, bonds tend to do well when stocks do badly. But what we've seen is a parallel drop in both stock and bond markets. And downward movements that are correlated to this extent are pretty much unprecedented in the last 15 years or so.
So different types of assets have been moving in the same direction. Why is this a problem?
Well, it actually wouldn't be a problem if all asset prices were going up in tandem. But it's during difficult times in portfolios that we rely on this type of diversification to limit the level of losses. Bonds are typically the safe haven asset that we hold in portfolios when stormy weather hits, like it has done, and we hold them to offset some of the declines that we experience in the riskier assets in the portfolio. But because of some pretty major forces at play, that traditional relationship between stocks and bonds has been broken, which has led to sharp drops across the board, pretty much.
You mentioned some major forces have been disrupting markets and making investors nervous.
That's right. There have been some pretty major forces. If we consider the last decade, the dominant story has been one of low interest rates and the bond buying of central banks, which is referred to as quantitative easing or QE. And this boosted the economy because buying bonds in an open market meant money flowed from the central banks to the institutions or the individuals who were selling those bonds. And then the pandemic hit and COVID provided even more double-barreled stimulus, both on the fiscal side, where we refer to things like government spending in the form of support loans and so on, and on the monetary side, where we saw interest rates fall to basically zero, making it extremely cheap to borrow and therefore cheap to spend. Then moving into 2021, as economies began to reopen, we saw a big surge in demand, with supply still being relatively limited. So we had a situation where there was more money chasing a constrained level of goods and services, and that's exactly what causes inflation. So we saw prices start to creep higher. And then what we've seen this year is a lingering inflation rate, further compounded by both the spike in commodity prices following the devastating war in Ukraine, as well as supply chain bottlenecks that have resulted from the strict COVID lockdowns in China. And it's worth remembering that it's the job of central banks to control inflation. So in fulfilling that role, we're moving from the position of quantitative easing to a position of quantitative tightening.
So if quantitative easing was about lowering interest rates and providing liquidity, what does quantitative tightening look like?
Well, in very simple terms, it's essentially just the opposite of the easing measures that I mentioned. Central bank policy is changing, and what we're watching is a major reversal in that liquidity backdrop. Whereas before, central banks were buying up assets like bonds, now they're selling them off. The reality of this is that the balance sheets of central banks in the US, UK, EU, and Japan are now set to shrink by about $4 trillion between now and the end of 2023. And they're taking action on interest rates as well. So earlier in June of this year, the US Federal Reserve made their first 75 basis point rate hike since 1994. The ECB announced an end to its own bond purchasing program and said that in July it would deliver its first rate increase since 2011. Meanwhile, at home, the Bank of England also recently raised interest rates by 25 basis points to 1.25%, and that's the fourth time it's done so since December 2021. And in sum, this means that financing is becoming more costly for individuals and companies. That means we're seeing higher bond yields, we're seeing falling equity prices, and mortgage rates are on the rise.
It's fair to say the monetary environment is undergoing something of a sea change. Could you explain a bit more about why and how these changes are causing stock and bond markets to fall?
Well, from an economics perspective, when interest rates rise, it makes borrowing money more expensive, lowering spending, cooling the economy, and bringing inflation down. At least that's the aim. But interest rates also have an unexpectedly broad impact on asset prices. For bond investors, rising rates can mean the value of existing bonds drops because their coupon payments, otherwise known as the interest or the yield, are now lower than the new bonds being offered in the market. So prices must adjust lower to reflect this difference, leading to an inverse relationship between interest rates and bond prices.
And then what about stock markets?
The situation is slightly different for stocks or equities, as we sometimes call them, but again, interest rates play a key part. If we think in simple terms, companies listed on stock markets are priced according to an expectation of earnings in the future. Rising interest rates make it more expensive for businesses to finance their operations and their existing debt. A more difficult trading environment could present challenges to company earnings. So the stock market has effectively discounted this potential hit by reflecting a lower share price. Companies with high expected but as yet unproven revenue streams, which are broadly known as growth companies, have seen an exaggerated fall in prices thanks to this more uncertain outlook. And that's because those promised future earnings are worth less in today's world.
We know that interest rates have been rising in recent months, but where do we go from here and what might the ultimate consequences be?
The big question is whether the scale of the tightening will be enough to keep a lid on inflation or whether the Bank of England or Federal Reserve in the US overcorrect, which would lead to wider economic consequences. We think there are three likely possible outcomes from central banks facing this inflation challenge. The first one is that central banks stay behind inflation in that they raise interest rates too slowly. And the impact of that may be that inflation keeps rising. The second outcome might be that actually interest rates overshoot inflation. They rise too much, they over-tighten the economy, and we see a situation where growth grinds to a halt and we have a recession. The last scenario is what we'd call the Goldilocks scenario, where the policy that they bring in is just right. Interest rates aren't too high or too low, and inflation has a soft landing from its current high. And obviously, predicting which of these outcomes will happen and when is a matter of a lot of debate at the moment. So will the Bank of England put up with higher inflation to avoid a recession? Or will it and other central banks just accept the hit to economic growth in pursuit of their inflation targets?
Yes, and clearly no one has certain answers to those questions at the moment. So James, if I can turn to you, Chris has just given us a rundown of what's been happening, From a practical perspective, how does this uncertainty impact the way you are approaching investment decisions today?
Thanks, Andre. Well, I guess a good place to start is accepting that you can't accurately predict every fall and rise in the markets. Indeed, successful long-term investing tends to be more about time in the markets rather than timing the markets. And that's because the markets generally rise over time. So, for example, if you look at the FTSE 100 over the last 40 years, there have been over twice as many good days, i.e. when the index has risen, than bad days when it's gone down. Trying to consistently identify the bad days over a period of time is really difficult. So our approach to managing portfolios includes a tactical element, which enables us to stay invested whilst tilting our portfolios towards assets we think represent better value during particular economic climates. So whilst we think there's likely to be further volatility ahead, we do think there are areas we can invest in that will do relatively well given the current economic climate. And that's one in which inflation is likely to be stubborn, interest rates are likely to increase, and growth is likely to be weak.
And which areas do you think currently have better prospects?
Well, we've increased our exposure to a number of areas. One is infrastructure investments, and this includes things like toll roads, regulated utilities, rail freight, phone masts, and airports. The reason these are likely to do well is because they typically earn inflation-linked revenues through the contracts they've agreed. Other real assets like real estate and commodities provide exposure to physically backed and inflation-linked investments as well. And these are the things that are typically in short supply at the moment, like energy, oil and gas. When it comes to stocks, we favour the FTSE 100. Although it hasn't performed as strongly as the US over the last 10 years or so, we think it represents relatively good value at the moment because of the types of companies that make up the index, such as companies dealing in energy and commodities, which tend to do well in a high inflation rate environment, and also in financial companies like banks, which often benefit from higher interest rates.
Chris, sustainable investing is a large part of what we do. Can you tell us what's happening on the sustainable side?
From a sustainable perspective, things are slightly different. We can still invest in sectors like infrastructure that meet our strict criteria for ethics and sustainability. But from a commodity perspective, we avoid oil and gas. But we have recently added an exposure to responsibly sourced gold. Gold is a dual-purpose asset because it acts as both an inflation hedge and a safe haven store of value when things get volatile. What we've done is we've sourced a particular fund called the Royal Mint Responsibly Sourced Gold ETF because primarily of its strong industry-leading sustainability credentials. It is backed by 100% post-2019 LBMA-approved gold bars. And 2019 is the point at which LBMA, the London Bullion Market Association, updated their responsible gold guidance, which increased the scope and the depth of requirements. The Royal Mint itself also exercises its own checks and measures to ensure that the precious metals it has in deposit are responsibly sourced and the suppliers that it uses meet all of the stringent policies on employment practices, anti-money laundering, child labour practices, and so on.
And it's probably also worth pointing out that in addition to these investments, we hold a wider range of global equity and bond allocations that we still think offer significant long-term opportunities for investment return. And of course, we are regularly reviewing our strategy and positioning on an ongoing basis.
Thank you both for being here today with us and for sharing your thinking. And thank you to everyone out there for listening. If you'd like to contact us for further details of the current investment environment and how we are positioning our strategies, you can find our contact details by visiting our website, edisonwm.com, or just email us on hello@edisonwm.com. Thank you for listening. We would like to point out that the content of this recording does not constitute investment advice. Past performance is not a guide to future performance, and the value of investments and the income arising from them can go down as well as up and are not guaranteed, which means that you may not get back what you invested. The views expressed in this recording are the views of Edison Wealth Management. Edison Wealth Management is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.